We have looked at the communicating the good news through Muslim festivals, and before we think about Muslim rites like burial, funeral burials and so on, I would like us to consider practical suggestions about involving our Muslim friends in Christian festivals. You will be able to make some suggestions probably if you have lived with Muslims or in Muslim sections of a city or in Muslim countries. So we'll have a little input from you, I hope. But first, let's think about Christmas, the second greatest festival of the Christian calendar. I remember some friends, missionaries, in Beirut who deliberately chose to live in a section of the city and in a particular block of flats or apartments which were entirely inhabited by Muslims. And I remember the wife telling me, well, when it came to Christmas, we sent our three children through the whole block of apartments, each to give some cakes and sweets to each apartment. So the children took these homemade cakes and sweets, and I've no doubt said Happy Christmas. Muslims are generally fairly aware about the birth of Jesus. In Pakistan, it's a national holiday, but it's not to celebrate the birth of Jesus, it's to celebrate the birth of the founder of Pakistan. But that's an accommodating way to deal with minorities. Christian is the largest minority, and so the day that they particularly celebrate is made a national holiday, but commemorating somebody else. And so everybody can have the day off. This is a good method. And in the hospital where I lived in the Northwest Frontier Province, a free meal, was given on Christmas Day to all patients and relatives. Relatives tend to come to hospitals with the patients and look after them during their illness. So it's generally a family around, not just one patient. But everybody was welcome to this meal in honour of the birth of Jesus. And this could happen with hospitals or clinics. It might happen anywhere. Sometimes I've been involved in holding a tea party for Muslim women to celebrate Christmas, telling them that it's our special festival, and would they like to come and have tea and join in learning a bit about the customs that go with Christmas and the meaning of it. And I've had several Muslim women in my home, and we've had special songs, Christmas songs and a Christmas reading, sometimes a film strip or in some other visual aid to explain the facts about Christmas and the customs. Sometimes you could hold a Christmas party, children's party, with games and songs and some religious content. Now, I think it's important that you explain to your Muslim friends whose children would like to come and do come that there will be some explanation of the meaning of Christmas, so they don't think they're just going to go to a fun party that doesn't have anything else in it, and that they would be surprised, therefore, for a Christian or a spiritual content. But it doesn't have to be very, it has to be appropriate for children. Children's party with games, songs and some religious content. Carol singing party. In Bannu, we used to get woken up at 4 o'clock in the morning because a carol singing party would go round, and they would sing to patients on the wards, and they would come and sing to some of the staff outside in their homes or outside their homes, and that would be 4 in the morning. Sometimes their special films, the Jesus film, very popular among Muslim women. I know that in the town of Multan it was shown at the Christian hospital there, and they had to have several showings because it was so popular. But on special occasions like Christmas, it would be shown. And it would be only women attending the showing. It was a zenana showing, a women's showing. Then other ways in which you might at some place, bear testimony to Christmas. In Banu, in the frontier, it's a tradition there. There's been a Christian hospital there for nearly 100 years. To put little lamps, divas, that's a clay pot with a candle in it, with a wick in it, and inside some oil, and there's oil and the wick, and it's so you can make these very cheaply. They put them round the edge of these flat-roofed buildings, the hospital, the homes, the staff, also the church. Church, incidentally, is built in sort of Muslim style with four minarets, but a cross over the door. It's an attempt to contextualize in architecture. But these lights, and I remember walking across the hospital courtyard and being stopped by a patient's husband, I think. He said, why are all these lights around? So I came up with one of my statements, which I'm keen on, as you've gathered. Jesus, it's the birthday of Jesus, and he is the light of the world. So we have all these lights. So right every Christmas Eve for nearly 100 years, this has been the custom. Let's think about, I like to think about Lent. I don't know if you keep Lent, but the run-up to Easter, fasting Christians, and quite often in Muslim countries, Christians do fast, partly because they're so conscious about fasting in general. And in some Christian traditions, fasting is quite usual. The Orthodox Church in Cyprus, where I live, it's the prevailing family, Christian family, is the Orthodox Church, and the Orthodox don't stop eating, but they don't eat meat during Lent, and there are various other things that they refrain from during Lent, which is the 40 days running up to Easter. And Anglicans, some of them keep Lent and mark it in certain ways by abstaining, but not a total fast. Muslims ask Christians, yeah, we know you fast, so how do you fast? What do you do? And I'm constantly trying to think of new explanations about the Christian fasting, and that would be help Muslims understand a kind of fasting that doesn't earn merit, because that's what they're thinking. But it's... And I have got some Muslim friends who have kept the fast of the Muslim fast. One in a strongly Muslim country, a man, felt he would come nearer to the people that he was responsible for in his job if he fasted. I don't think I've met any woman who's actually kept the fast. I know Phil Parshall has kept it several times. Maybe his wife has too. Don't know about that. But anyway, that's the Muslim fast. But fasting is one of the five pillars of Islamic practice. So it's a bridge, in a sense. So how do you fast? What do you do? Or why don't you fast? And what's the purpose of the fasting? I like to say we don't fast on a large basis because, in fact, some Christians won't fast. Because the bridegroom is with us. We are a people of celebration, so we're not fasting. But it is a good idea, I will tell my Muslim friends, to set aside time, more time sometimes, for prayer and for a reading of the Holy Book, the Bible in our case. But I try to think of other explanations, but it's always going to come down somehow or the other that we are not trying to earn merit by it. It's not required. It's an optional extra if we like it, and or if we feel God by his Spirit is guiding us that way. But that's a totally different idea that they have. But you'll find if you're doing your shopping, the shopkeeper may ask you. You'll find that your Muslim friend will ask you. School kids will ask you about it. So each year I try to think of some more creative way of using this opportunity when they ask a question about it. And then Easter, the greatest of Christian festivals. I want to tell you about one thing that happened in the Sindh province of Pakistan. There's a hospital in a village area or a rural area of Sindh, Christian hospital. It's a sort of country town. A lot of people in that town belong to a subsect of subsect of the Shias. They are Ahmadi. They're considered actually heretical by many Muslims, and Pakistan is one of the countries which has declared them non-Muslim. Not all Muslim countries say they're non-Muslim. They regard, some of them regard their leader, Ghulam Ahmad Khan, as their, they think he's a prophet. So that means that for them, Muhammad is not the seal of the prophets, the last of the prophets, but one other has come. And that is the heretical point. So other Muslims in that town are not Ahmadi. There are a few Christians there and some tribal people who may be sort of animist. But anyway, the Christians in the hospital who have a good relationship with their patients who come from around, as well as the town itself, decided that they would have a Bible reading in the kind of and some celebration with, I think, some songs, but they would do it in Quranic style. And I think I've told you before that you can have a Quran reading in which 30 ladies gather together to read in one morning the whole of the Quran, each taking a different section. If you look in my Quran here, you'll find it's divided up into 30 sections, 120 sections, and 60 sections. So if there were 60 women, you'd get through it more quickly. And if there are 120, it would be half the morning. But and for that, they sit on the floor on a cushion, and they put their Qurans on a rehl, or a stand. You've probably seen the stands. And that's in front as they read. So the Christians in this hospital decided that they would put 24, I think they didn't go to 30, but it was something like that, in a circle in a comfortable room in one of the bungalows, I think, of that, or in some large room on their hospital territory. And so they wrote very nice, beautifully written in Urdu invitations to this celebration about Jesus and his death and his resurrection. And 23 women turned up. The 24th woman wasn't able to come, but she sent a special message. In fact, I think she came and said, it came not at that time, but another time, and said, "I'm so sorry I missed this, but couldn't you have another one?" And they thought, well, we got 23 out of 24 and the 24th wanted to come, so why don't we have another one? And so they quickly put on another reading and celebration, and another 24 people came. So it turns out to be, they had tea afterwards and cookies or whatever, cakes and some of the not very nice Pakistani sweetmeats, which I am not allowed to eat. But anyway, they... It turned out to be a very successful, I should think, that kind of way of interacting and sharing. I should think part of the success of it was their relationship, good relationships that they built up in the area through their medicine and through individual encounters with patients and friends. But I think the effort at doing it more like a Quranic style reading was more familiar and people felt at home, perhaps. Well, it was very popular, that's all I can say, so perhaps to be copied somewhere. And then the same possibilities of sending sweets to neighbours and friends as for Christmas, and the possibility of including Muslim friends in special meals at Christmas time. Any other suggestions you might have? I'm rather in the business of trying to think of a few other festivals that we might celebrate. I can think of one brother who works in a Muslim country. He decided to celebrate his 40th birthday, and it's a very significant birthday for quite a number of people in the Muslim world. They don't always celebrate it specially, but they're used to this sort of idea. So he worked it out very carefully, and he gave some testimony to God's dealings with him and bringing him to his 40th year. But there was a meal, and the men were separated, but I think there was a curtain so the women could hear. So the women were there, but women were sort of separate. His wife was with them and he with the men, but the way they'd arranged it, certainly they could eat at the same time and they could hear because of the curtain, they got the privacy the women needed. It's appropriate in many Muslim settings for Christians to go to Muslims to congratulate them on their festival, and then for Muslims to come to Christians and congratulate them on their festival. And this is what you are describing, really. I know the sheikh of one Muslim state, he goes to the Christians who have a hospital in his sheikhdom. He goes to see some of the staff and to congratulate them on their Christmas or on their Easter. Both, I think he does. And they go to him, to his palace, and congratulate him and his family on these two festivals, but particularly Eid al-Fitr and Eid al-Azha. It's appropriate. And we used to sit up in where I lived in Banu in the northwest frontier. We used to receive people sometimes out on the lawn outside, but some local people would come to congratulate us. And then it's, as I say, appropriate sometimes sometimes it's the men who would go and congratulate, but sometimes it would be, in that town where I lived, the women rarely, we would rarely go to a Muslim home unless we were just going to see the women. But in the Punjab, it would be much freer. And then also calamity or difficulty. In Cairo, I happened to be there staying with an Egyptian family once, Christian family, when there was rioting. And my hostess said, I'm just going to phone my husband. And then she said, I'm just going to go through the flats and see if everybody's got enough bread and enough this and that. So she was the only Christian family in this block of 12, I think. But the husband came back and offered to go. She went round and said, do you have enough bread? Do you have enough this and that? And then she said, would you like my husband to go and collect your children? Because this curfew, and maybe the husband was away. And so this gave them a tremendous opening in those 12 homes, because at a crisis point, they offered help in food and in getting the children back before there was a total curfew. And actually, there was a 2.5-day curfew, and my plane to another part of the Middle East flew over Cairo because planes weren't landing. But the point is, some crisis of this sort can cement relationships very well if you respond in some creative way. So there's room here for experiment and for considering how in your particular cultural setting you may involve Muslims in your festivals, and how we may deepen our relationships.